It's tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. A variety program with a very special guest coming up in this hour. It's the Fleischman's East Hour, hosted by Rudy Valli, and among stars, Frank Fay, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., and Graham McNamee, the announcer for the program. We'll hear a story by A.A. Milne, author of Winnie the Pooh, also Ozzie and Harriet before their sitcom days on the air as musicians, and the very special guest, Helen Keller, the 20th century's leading advocate for the deaf and blind. At the age of two, Keller had fallen seriously ill and in her recovery was left without sight or hearing. After her family sought help from the experts, including Alexander Graham Bell, who was working with the deaf at the time, were pointed to the Perkins Institution in Massachusetts for help. There they connected with Perkins grad Anne Sullivan, who ended up moving in with the Kellers to teach Helen how to communicate, and the ground was then set for Helen Keller's healing process and eventual fame, having progressed with the methods of Braille and communication far faster than any other person in her situation up to that time. Her accomplishments led to further meetings with Graham Bell and even with President Grover Cleveland, as she served as a young ambassador for research in the functional life training of the deaf and blind. Leaving her legacy along the way, Keller and her teacher Anne spent a great deal of their lives delivering lectures around the world about their methods, progress, and studies in the field. One stop on this perpetual tour was on this next broadcast of the Fleischman's East Hour with Rudy Valli, heard on February 27, 1936 on NBC.
The Fleischman's East Hour, directed by Rudy Valli. Presenting tonight, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Helen Keller, June Walker, Frank Fay, Ozzie Nelson, Harriet Hilliard.
Everybody, this is Rudy Valli and company. As our Mr. McNamee just hinted, we have quite a company this evening. Let's run through the lineup again, Graham.
Douglas Fairbanks Jr. with June Walker in a one-act play by A.A. Milne.
Miss Helen Keller, called by Mark Twain the most remarkable woman of the century.
Frank Fay, the wonder comic. You wonder what he's going to do next, and so do we.
Woo!
Harriet Hilliard and Ozzie Nelson, famous band leader and his famous wife, who is now, as a result of Follow the Fleet, on the verge of movie stardom.
The Connecticut Yankees, who need no introduction.
Thank you.
could be the wealthy owner of a large industry, I would say, not for me, I'd rather lead a band. If I could be a politician with a chance to dictate, I would say, let it wait, I'd rather lead a band. My every care ceases, I'm rich as old Croesus, when I've got 10 pieces in hand. If I could have a millionaire's with a whole block of banks, I would just whisper thanks, I'd rather lead a band. Directly after the New York preview of the new Fred Astaire picture, Follow the Fleet, word went round and round that Harriet Hilliard had pretty well stolen her first feature-length film. The opening this week confirmed that rumor. RKO definitely has a new star in Mrs. Ozzie Nelson. We extend our hearty congratulations to Harriet and to Ozzie, both of whom are with us tonight. On Sundays, Harriet sings with Ozzie's band. Tonight, they both sing for us. Harriet and Ozzie, Mr. and Mrs. Nelson, front and center.
Thank you, Rudy. In behalf of my distinguished consort and myself, I want to express
your distinguished what?
Consort, C-O-N-S-O-R-T, consort.
Oh, I'm your consort. Is that what I am, your consort?
Well, sort of a band consort.
Oh, did you get that, Rudy? Band consort.
Well, Rutgers men are like that, I've been told.
And I have to live for dear old Rutgers.
Harriet, am I going to have trouble with you?
A little music, please, Rudy, to cover Nelson's embarrassment.
Am I going to have trouble with you? Am I gonna have trouble with you? When I get romantic and I talk of love, you look out the window. Tell me, why is it you've never said you enjoyed eating crackers in bed? Now, before we were married, you hardly ever ate. And now I'm broke keeping you fed. Oh, you're expensive enough when you buy those gorgeous clothes. Oh, it would even be tough with a bankroll bigger than Durante's nose. Now, after 10 weeks in far Hollywood, it's lucky that picture is good. 'Cause you're too darn sweet for me to have trouble with you.
Am I gonna have trouble with you? Am I gonna have trouble with you? When I get romantic and I talk of love, you start eating peanuts. Every blonde-headed girl dancing by is a victim of your roving eye. Of course, I should have had more sense than to marry an orchestra guy. Oh, much trouble enough. You're just a guy what won't behave. You know, sometimes I think you like to treat me rough. You only kiss me when you need a shave. If I want to go out for a bite, you say, oh, I'm so tired tonight. But you're too darn sweet for me to have trouble with you.
Thank you very much. Rudy, as I was saying before we were so rudely interrupted, the Frau and I are deeply grateful for your kind introduction. For myself, I'd like to say quite seriously that I'm in your debt to a considerable extent for whatever degree of success I've achieved on the air. Just after I was graduated from Rutgers while I was in law school, I heard you sing for the first time. And it was your early success that inspired me to make a start of my own.
Well, it's nice of you to say that, Ozzie, but I'm sure you'd have gone places anyway.
And what places? Do you know what he told me, Rudy?
Now, Nick.
He told me that when he first heard you sing on the air, he said to himself, if that guy can get away with awful stuff like this, so can I.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. Ozzie Nelson, Nay Hilliard of Hollywood and Hackensack, will now render Don't Count Your Kisses Before You're Kissed.
Band consort, huh? Don't count your kisses before you're kissed. I'm just a party who may resist. Sounds like I'm stolen, but I haven't fallen as yet. Now, if you're looking for my consent, I'll need a lot of encouragement. Wait for the question, for you know the answer you'll get. Now, I'm in favor of the flavor of the gum you chew. I'm simply mad about the bad, about the good in you. But don't count your kisses before your kiss. Don't count your kisses before your kiss.
The title to this is Don't Count Your Kisses Before Your Kiss.
That's it. Go ahead and spoil my song. You wait, I'll get even. You'll be sorry, too.
Well, will you always be a sister?
You wouldn't fool me, mister.
Not much.
You can say that again. Now, if you're looking for my consent, I'll need a lot of encouragement.
Suppose I brought you some flowers.
Uh-huh, I'd probably die from the shock.
That's it. Go ahead and tear me down. You know, I can see at a glance that my considerate treatment of you is completely misunderstood.
Well, you treat me all right, but not often enough, and furthermore, not too good.
Ouch.
But don't count your chickens before they're hatched. Closing the door to my heart is latched. The answer to this is don't count your kisses before your kiss.
We present now one who is in many respects the most remarkable woman of our time, Miss Helen Keller, deprived of sight, speech, and hearing since early babyhood. Her life has been a series of dramatic triumphs over seemingly insurmountable obstacles. She has learned to talk, a superhuman achievement for a person who can neither see nor hear. She has graduated from the regular course of Radcliffe College, cum laude. She has raised more than $1 million to finance the American Foundation for the Blind, bringing joy and happiness to countless thousands. Miss Keller's lifelong companion and teacher, Ann Sullivan Macy, had planned to be here also tonight, but illness keeps her at home. We send her our best wishes for a speedy recovery. In her place, Miss Keller's secretary, Miss Polly Thompson, will assist us. Before I introduce Miss Keller herself, Miss Thompson will tell us something about Helen's early years. Miss Thompson, how could Mrs. Macy begin to communicate with Helen as a child?
That beginning, Mr. Vallee, was one of the most remarkable things in the history of education. You have seen deaf and dumb people talk to each other with their fingers.
Yes, but Helen was blind. She couldn't see the manual alphabet. And, of course, she couldn't hear it.
That's true. So teacher taught her to feel the alphabet. She placed Helen's doll in one of her hands. Then she made the signs of the letters D-O-L-L over and over again, with her fingers resting on the inside of Helen's other hand.
And Helen learned what those signs meant?
She soon learned that when she made those same signs in teacher's hand, she got her doll. And she learned other words the same way, particularly things she liked to eat. But even so, Helen didn't realize yet that everything has a name.
That was the next step?
Yes. Helen had already learned that when she formed the signs for W-A-T-E-R, she got a cup of water to drink. But she didn't know which was cup and which was water until one day, out in the yard, teacher held her hand under the water from the pump and spelled W-A-T-E-R into the other hand. Then suddenly it dawned on Helen that everything has a name, and she insisted on learning the name of everything she touched all the way back to the house.
And then?
From then on, teacher says, Helen's education was very much the same as any child's, only she learned through her hand instead of through her eyes and ears.
And when did she learn to talk?
She declared her intention to learn to talk when she was 11, only 3 years after her education had begun. Teacher explained how impossible this was, but Helen went right ahead and learned, though it took her many years.
Miss Keller has a particular purpose in talking to the radio audience tonight, I believe.
Yes, the Better Vision Institute, a foundation in which she is very much interested, is cooperating with eyesight specialists for a national effort along educational lines. Miss Kenner is anxious that everyone should know about Save Your Vision Week and the work of the Institute.
And we are very happy, Miss Thompson, to be of any assistance. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we ask the courtesy of your very close attention as we present a very great lady, Miss Helen Keller. Miss Keller, I shall ask you a few questions, and Miss Thompson will transmit them to you. Tell me, Miss Keller, I know you will realize the question isn't as impertinent as it may sound. Are you happy?
Yes, I'm happy. Happiness comes from within. I have the courage and the faith. I'm happy.
If you could have one wish granted, what would it be?
I want wish for light in every eye and in every mind.
Probably more people are listening to your voice now, Miss Keller, than ever before. Is there anything you wish to say to them?
Yes. I hope that everyone listening today will help the Bethlehem Vision Institute in its effort to conserve eyesight. Be a friend to those who will never see the light of day. Be good to them always. There is no lovelier way to thank God for your sake than by giving a helping hand to someone in the dark.
Miss Keller, we think you are one of the finest, grandest women in the world. We thank you for appearing on our broadcast.
Thank you, Mr. Valley. Good night.
Good night. The Fleischman Geist Hour, broadcast from the Variety Theater in Radio City. Presenting tonight, Harriet Hilliard, Ozzie Nelson, Helen Keller, Frank Fay, June Walker, and Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. Act Two opens with an English novelty, Schoolboy Howlers. Now, everyone has heard of schoolboy howlers, the funny things that schoolboys say and do. So if you'll kindly listen for a moment, I'm going to try and tell you one or two. My boys are very backward with their lessons. Oh, their ignorance can hardly be believed. So I'll ask them all some very simple questions. And these are the replies that I usually receive. Alfie? Alfie, me lad, tell me. What are barbarians? Be careful now. What are barbarians?
Well, look here, sir. Barbarians are round things, mind you, in a groove. Inside the wheels of bicycles, so they'll run smooth, Will.
Oh, what a terrible howler. He ought to know better than that.
Now, come here, Tony. Tony, take your fingers out of your mouth and put your feet in. Tell me, what is an exit? Think now, what is an exit?
I'll tell you, I haven't any doubt. A door you think you're going in, and finally you're coming out.
Oh, what a terrible howler. He ought to know better than that.
Come here, Red Stanley. Stop sniffling. Blow your nose. Now tell me, what is celluloid? What is celluloid?
Why, that's a very easy one, mister. Celluloid is no one else but Harold Lloyd's kid sister.
Oh, what a terrible howler. He ought to know better than that.
Dave Franklin, have you been imbibing?
Yes.
Pull yourself together now. Steady,
yes,
steady.
Yes,
that's
yes,
it. Now, don't
yes,
fall.
Yes.
Tell me. What is a chrysanthemum?
Yes.
What is a chrysanthemum?
Well, look here. A chrysanthemum is something grows in a pot. When I can't shake a chrysanthemum, I say forget-me-not. Whoopee!
You don't want to tell about our lives. We ought to know better than that.
Well, now, let's see. Let's have a little bit of grammar here. Girls, come forward. Tell me what you know about grammar in your lessons. Judy, what is an adjective?
An adjective is used to emphasize a declaration. There are two kinds, mild and the kind you use at rehearsal.
Quiet, please. There'll be enough of that. Now, Julie, what is a noun?
A noun is the name of anything.
And a verb?
Verbs agree with nouns, except for husbands and mother-in-laws.
Oh, quiet, quiet, please. See here, Red, I thought I told you to stop sniffling. Now, what is an interjection?
Interjections are exclamations such as touch, touch, fiddlestick, and some fun, I'll say.
Attention, Baptiste. Baptiste, what did Napoleon say at Waterloo? You should know this now.
Oui.
What does that mean in English?
You blow through here, the music goes round and round. Whoa, whoa, yahoo!
Amy, now tell me, what is a viper? Be careful now, what is a viper?
Well, I'll tell you. I'm not certain, but it's my belief that a viper is a new name for my papa's handkerchief.
No one can tell about our land. He ought to know better than...
Present now Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., scion of motion picture royalty, a star in his own right, now the head of a new Anglo-American producing company, Criterion Films. After a brief Hollywood visit, young Douglas has stopped off in New York to complete the organization of this new United Artists unit. His first Criterion picture, The Amateur Gentleman, will soon be ready for release in this country. You will hear the Junior Fairbanks this evening in a short comedy by a famous English playwright, A.A. Milne. As his leading lady, we have chosen one of Broadway's most expert comedians, Miss June Walker. Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. with June Walker in The Artist by A.A. Milne.
Scene, the hall of an English country cottage, a man's cottage. Through the open door from the garden, a pretty girl comes suddenly. She looks behind her to see that she is not followed. Round the hall to see that she is alone. Then she gets to work. It's a letter she's wanting. One which has just come by post and should be waiting here for its owner. Now she's at the writing desk, no longer alone. There is a man at the open window. With a sigh of relief, she has picked up several letters from the desk and is beginning to look through them when he interrupts her.
Yes?
Oh, how you startled me. Oh.
How do you do? I'm sorry I startled you.
Yes, you see, you being the wrong person made it particularly startling.
Yes, that would make it worse, of course.
I thought you were going to be Mr. Matheson.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not.
Oh, well, it isn't your fault. I expect he got the name first.
Was Mr. Matheson expecting you?
Yes. Rather, no.
Well, just as you prefer.
Thank you very much. Then I think perhaps it's no.
The no's have it.
You see... It's dreadfully hot today, isn't it?
Dreadfully.
Yes, I don't know when I've been so hot.
Well, it is hot work, of course.
What is?
Well, that sort of thing. Purloining letters. Purloining is the correct term, I believe.
Are you presuming to suggest, Mr...
Bathurst.
Bathurst? Mm. Thank you.
Not at all. Shall I put those letters back in the desk for you?
Oh, no. No, thanks. I like holding them.
Well, I was just going to send down Mr. Matheson's letters for him. It's the second post, isn't it? May I...
Oh, are these his letters? Oh, so they are. All three of them. Here, take them. One, two, three.
Hey. Now, what about number four?
Number four?
Yeah, the one in your bag.
How quick you are, Mr...
Bathurst.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes.
May I have it?
No, no, you see, it's mine.
Addressed to you?
Addressed by me. I wrote it.
Oh. Well, how do I know?
Well, I've just told you.
Well, of course. I suppose if you say you did, but all the same, there's a little bit more to it than that.
Yes, there is. What are you doing here, my good man? This is Mr. George Matheson's cottage, and you say your name is Bathurst. That's very suspicious.
I've rented the cottage furnished for the summer.
Oh, well, of course, but Mr. Matheson ought to have come back today.
Well, he suddenly changed his mind. I rather wanted to stay on, and here I am.
Here we are.
Exactly. I'm sorry to seem to harp on the subject, but when once a letter has gone through the post, it isn't the property of the writer any longer.
I say, you aren't a judge or a policeman or a clergyman or anything strict, are you?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm an architect.
Oh, well, they're never very strict. When they say it'll be 3,000, it's always 4.
Sorry. It's no good.
It wouldn't help if I ordered a couple of houses, hot and cold.
No, I'm afraid not.
If I told you that I wrote this letter on a mad impulse and that I now regret the impulse and want to save Mr. Matheson the great pain of reading it, what would you say?
I'd say, I don't know if it's true and I don't care if it's true. Keep the letter if it would make you any happier.
Ah, thank you. It is true, you know.
Oh, that's all right. Don't bother about it anymore. I'll run along.
Mr. Bathurst?
Yes?
Have you ever had mumps?
Had what?
Mumps. You know, mumps.
Well, as a child, I suppose. Why?
Oh, nothing. It was true, you know, about that letter. I was running away.
From Matheson?
Yes. George and I, Mr. Matheson and I, we were engaged.
Oh.
Almost married, you might say. Vans called, invitations sent out, presents pouring in, meeting each other's aunts, you know. Well, then I met Henry. Henry rather swept me off my feet.
Good for Henry.
Well, Henry persuaded me to run away from it all and marry him at a registry office. I went to the registry office to meet Henry this morning. I'd written George last night. This letter, number 4.
I see. Number 4 contains the sad news about Henry.
Yes. Well, when I got to the registry office, what do you think I found?
Good old George, pacing up and down.
No, I found this. A telegram. Here.
Oh, am I to read it?
Please.
Have mumps, writing, Henry.
Have mumps, writing, Henry.
Well?
Well.
Well, after all, it isn't his fault, is it?
Well, it wasn't mine.
No, but I mean...
Mumps.
Yes, of course. One doesn't look one's best, but you needn't have seen him while he...
I never want to see him again.
Oh, now, come, that's hardly fair, is it?
I don't mind his having them. Anybody might have them, but to time it so badly...
I must say, I'm rather sorry for him.
Of course, you men always hang together. You're all alike.
We're nothing of the sort. I should never dream of having mumps on my wedding day. I'm not that sort of man at all.
Aren't you?
Of course not. All I meant was that I was sorry for Henry because he's lost you. Anybody would be sorry for him. A man with a great big face and a broken heart.
His heart isn't broken.
Well, why not? Mine would be.
Ah, yours. But you're different.
That's what I keep saying. Different, but to a certain extent, sympathetic with him in his great loss.
Wait, you haven't heard the worst. As soon as I read that telegram, Well, what could I do? I was staggered. I said, thank you, and went home all dazed. And when I got in, the first thing I saw was another telegram. Imagine how eagerly I tore it open. Here it is.
Am I to read this, too?
Please.
Have mumps. Writing, Henry.
Have mumps, writing, Henry.
The same mumps.
The same mumps.
Well?
Well.
Well, of course, I see what you mean.
Look at them. Have mumps, writing, Henry. Have mumps, writing, Henry. Doesn't that show you the sort of man he is?
Methodical.
He's probably telegraphed to all his relations in just the same words. All over the country, all over the empire, telegrams are being delivered. Have mumps writing, Henry. A man who can sit down to write 2 telegrams exactly the same.
He was lying down, Butcher.
Well, one can't marry that sort of man.
He isn't an artist, that's all. An artist is always feeling for the perfect way of expressing himself and never finding it. Henry, not being an artist, found it at once and stuck to it. Have mumps writing, Henry. It expressed all he had to express. The vague dissatisfaction which the artist always feels... Well, it never came to Henry. I mean, not in that way.
You know, you're rather interesting.
Am I?
That's quite right. right about being an artist. Yes, that's what's the matter with me. I'm always looking and never quite finding.
First George, then Henry.
Yes. Yes. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, that second telegram, have mumps writing Henry.
Mm.
That maddened me, being the same as the other. I telegraphed back, how funny, so have I, Bettine, and dashed down here.
Bettine.
You see, I had definitely decided I couldn't marry George, Henry or no Henry. I couldn't say what I wanted to say with George. Do you know George well?
Well, I know his solicitors better.
Yes, I think one does.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Only that sometimes when you're talking to George, you feel that you're talking to his legal representatives.
Bettine. I know I've heard that name.
It's a pretty name, isn't it?
Bettine Conway, of course.
That's me.
Yeah, I posted a letter to you. Oh, good Lord, no, I didn't. I still have it.
What sort of a letter?
Well, this morning I wanted to go into the village. George gave me a lift on his way back to London to ask me to post a letter for him. Here you are. Good Lord, I might have forgotten it forever.
Thank you. Do you mind if I read it now?
Not at all. Suppose I fix us up a little drink while you find out what's on old George's mind.
Good, I need one.
Right, coming right up.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Bathurst. Mr. Bathurst.
Fine, here we are, two of the best. What's wrong?
A drink, quickly. I give you a toast to Henrietta.
Henrietta, whoever she may be.
He doesn't mention her name, but she corresponds to my Henry.
Good Lord. You don't mean that...
I'm jilted. Yes, they were married this morning, George and Henrietta.
Well, perhaps she got mumps, too.
Nobody's matter could get mumps on George's wedding day. If only he'd got my letter first. I did jilt him first, didn't I? You're a witness.
You did, I swear. I swear it before a court of law.
Couldn't we draw up a statement?
Couldn't we just send that letter of yours onto him?
The one I wrote, number 4?
Yeah, look. Postmark is clear. You beat him by a whole day.
How brilliant you are. I didn't know that architects were like that.
Now, wait a minute. I've just thought of something. You say you're getting married in this. And then he'll come back from his honeymoon and...
And I'm not.
No, you're not. Now, did you go into any particulars about Henry? I mean, did you mention his name?
Well, not his actual name. But I said I was marrying him at once. And couldn't we steam open the letter? And then I could write another one and use the old envelope and...
I could suggest a better way than that if... I were privileged to advise a lady that...
What?
Well, that she should post the letter as it is...
But...
And then be married when he comes back.
To Henry?
Good heavens, no.
To whom, then?
Well, to anybody who, having offered himself for the experiment, was lucky enough to be accepted.
To some old friend, perhaps, whom she knew well?
Well, no. No, I think that as an artist, she should avoid the cliché and trust rather to the inspiration of the moment.
But we decided, didn't we, that the artist was never satisfied with his inspiration for much more than a moment.
One seeks always for something better, yes. For some more perfect means of expression. Or it'd be up to him of whom we are talking to be always just out of her reach so that one thought it was he whom she was seeking.
You know... It would be amusing if George came down here with Henrietta and found you.
And my wife.
Just leaving.
Yeah. My wife? My wife could explain carefully to Henrietta about the kitchen boiler and the oil stove or some other domestic trifle.
I should love doing that.
Good. Now, do we send that letter to George or don't we?
It's rather final, isn't it?
Well, it commits you to a husband, not necessarily to me.
I've got a sort of idea it will be you or nobody.
I've got that sort of idea, too. Now, let's have a drink on it. To George and his Henrietta.
To Henry and his mumps.
To you, my dear, and me. Artists, both of us. Come on, let's post that letter.
Into the night, I see your loveliness
I seem to see a vision of you. I hear a call, I listen again. Was it the wind or can it be you? Far into the night, though dreams are all in vain. Far into the night, you're mine again. Dr. Lee's messages are always interesting. They are brief and to the point. Tonight he has a message that may be of real value to many of our listeners. Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Valley. As people grow into and pass early middle age, they unnecessarily let down, and the physiological old age creeps up on them almost unawares. Appetite decreases, digestive secretions diminish. Poisons that bring on the signs of premature senility clog the system. With lessened appetite, the danger of missing essential food elements is ever present, and all the bodily functions indicative of robust health weaken. The physical signs of old age in the 40s and 50s are all too common, and in most cases can be avoided. Take special care of your health as you approach this time of age. Regardless of how little you eat, select a variety of foods. Take some exercise daily, but don't overdo it, and get plenty of sleep. If appetite fails, Fleischmann's yeast will help restore it. Thank you.
Those of you with long memories will remember that Frank Fay was prevented from singing a song here last week because there are only 60 minutes in each hour, including this one. As a result, Fay is now thoroughly clock conscious. This is a shame, really, because he was such a charming lad before he learned the facts of life. Hiya, Frank.
Thank you very much. Say, it's great tonight. I'm having a lot of fun. I've been watching the show. I've been listening to it in the control room. It's great. I was absolutely thrilled by Miss Keller and Mr. I enjoyed Mr. Ozzie Nelson and Miss Hiller's wife. They were great. He's a Rutgers man, isn't he, Rudy? Rutgers. And you're from Yale. I listened to you boys, too, and it decided me to go on the air when I heard both of you. Of course, I was only a child. Nurse had me by the fire thing. The campfire we were. I don't know. I think it was inside. We did have a fire in the house, as I remember now. Yes, and it was nice, you dear old gentleman. How I enjoyed you. But as Rudy has already told you, ladies and gentlemen, no uncertain terms with the Valley precision, He told you that they really ganged up on me last week, you know. I was just about to dissect to tell the truth about one of the numbers of the day, and this Valley guy, you see, he with a fiendish laugh, he told me the broadcast was running over time. In fact, he wrote it on a piece of paper, you see. They handed it to me, surprised me, and on a piece of paper, and it just said, "We're overtime, Faye. Go home." I mean, that really happened. No kidding. I was embarrassed, and... But as Valley is the head guy here, you see, I, the martyr, Martyr Fay. See that? That's Valley. Martyr Fay. See, I kind of like that. It's cuter than Martyr Francis Anthony. That'd be all right. I'll keep that. See, that's kind of pretty at that. See, with my song was unsung, however, that I wanted to sing, so I'm going to get it right in now and prove to you listeners in some of the things that are matter with the songs today. Play it like for me. Life is a song. Let's sing it together. That's the guy singing to a girl. Life is a song. Let's sing it together. You don't even tell her which song it is, you know? Just as let's sing it together. She may be a bass. He may be a bass. They're both, they don't know whether they're going to blend or anything. Just let's sing, you know? We won't spend any money. We'll just stay in the house and sing. Life is a song. I wish these songwriters would make up their minds about what life is. Life begins at 40. Life is just a bowl of cherries. Life is a funny proposition. Faye knows what life is. Oh, ho! Woo-hoo, do I know. Life is an insurance company.
Let's dip them in rye.
Pardon me, Frank. Here's a note for you.
Oh, we couldn't be overtime this quick.
No, this seems to be a telegram.
Is it important, like? Oh, yes. Yes, it is at that. Have mumps, writing Henry. I see. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you see how I hold myself. If he gets me that way, though. Every night he gets me all excited. I'm at fours and fives. Really, I am. I can't go the other. I've got to cut everything here, so I won't say sixes and sevens. I'll just hold back. But I am. I'm all upset. Hey, you know, I didn't tell you. I didn't tell you, ladies and gentlemen. I've got a real big surprise for you tonight. I'm starting a newspaper. Yeah, no kidding. Faye's starting a newspaper. The paper's called Faye Facts. Now, just wait till it gets on the stands, this newspaper. I don't care. It'll be the talk of the nation. I've got the first edition inaugurated, almost edited. It'll be right on the top of it, too. I'm going to have a remarkable slogan, too, Rudy. Will you see it? Oh, it'll just hit the eye of the public. It's going to say, all the news that's news to use. That's what it'll have on the top. That'll be the first. That'll attract everybody. And, of course, I'm the editor. I'm about everything there is in it. And I'm going to ride under a nom de plume, though, an alias, so to speak. William Randolph Pulitzer Fay. I think that's kind of pretty. I think that'll just kind of sweep you right off it. I had planned on making the paper nonpartisan, you see. Nothing to do, non-political, but I naturally had to do the right thing. And in doing the right thing, I want you to know that my paper will back. Will you hear me? Get ready, boys. Will back and sanction Rudy Valley for president. See that? He's sure of that many votes. He'll get those or else. He'll do his numbers with a guitar. I don't think they wouldn't be all right about Rudy. Rudy's got some great ideas, particularly about saving. And he's a cute fella. I'll tell you a nice thing about him. It would be a nice thing about him because, when you're paying your income tax, see, when you get that jolt, Rudy could bring the band around. They'd play for you while you were paying it out. Wouldn't hurt as much. And then when the foreign nations would come over for a touch, Rudy could sing them two hot choruses of Hi-ho, everybody, yes, that's him, you know? And he'd take their mind right off of it. Of course, my paper... will have a lot of beauty hints. The famous Fay beauty hints is the type. I have just to show you, like, on my first edition, one of the hints is going to be, don't bend over in traffic. That's one of my... I tried it. Of course, I'll have all the latest sporting news. I'll have baseball, football, prize fighting, rod and reel news. Yes. Where the trout is trouting. And I'll have advice to the lovelorn. Boy, will I have some advice. And when I say advice, I mean that we'll give you the advice, but you are expected to, in return, give us some advice. And I've got a brand new subject a song about that subject. What is it? Love? And I think it's kind of good. It's never been sung before. I'm so embarrassed about it. This song is brand new, and after I get through it, you won't be able to compare it with anybody else because it has play, would you? Until... Poets write about you. Nations hide about you. Love, you funny thing. When I think I've figured you out, I say to myself, what's it all about? Isn't love the strangest thing? It makes you cry. It makes you sing. It lifts you up and then it lets you down again. Isn't love the strangest thing? Like a birdie on the wing,
love makes you feel just like a king. And then another time, you feel just like a dime. Isn't love the strangest thing? Love can really hypnotize you, sweep you off your feet, it's true. Strange how love can tantalize you. It's happened to me, as it happened to you. Winter, summer, autumn, spring, one never knows what love can bring. The wise men of today all shake their heads and say, isn't love the strangest thing? You made me what I am today, was born poor soul's lament. And then there is that other type, you know, the carefree, don't care gent. He sings, I'm sitting high on a hilltop, telling all my troubles to the moon. Though he's higher, higher hat on that hilltop, he'll be hooked again and then he'll croon. Gosh darn it, love can really hypnotize you, sweep you off your feet, it's true. Strange how love can tantalize you. Oh, it's happened to me, has it happened to you? Don't lie now. Winter, summer, autumn, spring, one never knows what love can bring. I'm not alone, you see. There's a million more like me. Singing, isn't love the strangest thing?
Anyone can do it, there's nothing to it, and you'll add it to your dancing menu.
It'll drive you crazy,
rhythmatic.
Do it
kind of
lazy, rhythmatic.
It's a bit of trucking, you raise your shoulder and you strut. You dip, you glide, and then you walk a little bit. Talk a little bit. Talk of love and romance.
But if by chance you think of it, dance.
Everybody's doing it, rhythmatic. Every little co-ed is flipping a hip with her bow.
And oh, it's so delightful, say professor. Yes, sir, yes, sir. Gotta do that rhythmatic.
Then
you walk and talk a bit, maybe the key will change a bit. And if I can't, you think of it then.
Next week, we'll be headed by the screen's most popular boy actor, Freddie Bartholomew. Helen Lind, comedienne, and the notorious Faye will provide laughs. A comedy sketch by John Tucker Battle, featuring Eddie Green, colored comedian, completes the list. This last is one of the most unusual affairs ever broadcast, something we don't want any of our regular listeners to miss. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
I'd rather leave the band, putting all my eggs in one basket, and We Saw the Sea, performed on this program, where from the production, Follow the Fleet. And this is the National Broadcasting Company.
There's a limit to the honey from a bee, the leaves upon a tree, the bottom of the sea, but there isn't any limit to my love for you. Well, a bird can fly in the sky just so high and no more.
The Fleischmann's Yeast Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 27th, 1936 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.